Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and I couldn't do this without my partner, Jeff Rimebold. Jeff, how are you, mate?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very good. Lots of news out of the owners' meetings, which we'll get to in a second or two. We're going to do our State of the Franchise this week with the Buffalo Bills, the New Orleans Saints, and the Philadelphia Eagles. Bit of housekeeping, Jeff. I just got to get this out of the way before we get going. So NFL UK Live Tour is going to be taking in London on April the 10th, Liverpool April the 11th, Nottingham on the 12th, and Edinburgh on the 13th. You can still get your tickets via Ticketmaster, or all the details are on NFLUK.com. London sold out, but there's still tickets for Liverpool, Nottingham and Edinburgh. We've got Kirk Cousins, Jarvis Landry, Peter King, Kurt Warner, Steve Smith Sr. and Danny Shelton. So it should be a good lineup there. So get to NFLUK.com for more details on that. Jeff, I want to start and I'm going to say one sentence to you and then tell you to go. The Las Vegas Raiders, go.
Wow. You know what? It's killing me. It's killing me, and I know it's killing Raider Nation. I saw Mark Davis's comments the other day in the paper about, you know, he's going to have to talk to Raider Nation. They're going to play, Neil, they're going to play as lame ducks maybe as long as 2019 in Oakland. And, you know, as blasé as the San Diego Chargers fans have been reputed to be, you remember when it was announced that they were moving and that the guy was throwing eggs at the facility,
right?
And I mean, imagine what they might be throwing in Oakland.
There's a few things I want to get into here, Jeff, because there's not a lot of other news digging around, and this is huge, because in the last 13 or 14 months we've seen three teams move cities in the NFL, and you could argue that two have left behind or will leave behind very, very passionate fan bases in San Diego and now in Oakland. So we'll get to that sort of, I guess, the speed of this and the ease with which the Raiders in the end were able to move from Oakland to Las Vegas. But you mentioned it just there, potential lame duck team, Jeff. They can play in Oakland for 2017 and 18. They've got an option year for 2019. And Mark Davis was saying that he'd still like to consider the team playing in Oakland in 2019. The commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, said that the NFL is going to explore where they play in 2019. And you know what I'm like? My antenna went straight up then, because I'm thinking, why not put the Raiders in London for a year?
Well, you know what? You have floated that now for for a couple years that the Raiders were, you know. And it does make sense in a lot of ways. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see, Neil, because remember now, the bottom line is the bottom line, and this is a business. And if the fans don't come, and you know, if that's the decision that the fans choose to make, to just ignore the team and they don't come, then you may see something like that, because it makes more economic sense to, you know, put them in another place for at least a while until they get their, you know, Vegas home built. I just, you know, it's just so hard for me to grasp. And I know this really goes against, I saw some of the stuff in the mailbag. This really goes against the sensibilities of UK sports fans because, you know, your football franchises, your football teams are locked in those cities. I mean, you can't even comprehend, you know, Man U moving somewhere, or Liverpool moving somewhere, or, you know, Arsenal or whoever. And, you know, it just seems kind of like three of them in the last whatever months. And then to look at the way the vote went, Neil, apparently the only dissenting vote was the Dolphins.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's amazing. And look at the money, just the move fees that the NFL has made in the last year with three teams moving. I mean, those penalties that those teams have to pay, there's a gigantic sums of money.
Yeah, Jeff, I think this is always going to be interesting to watch from from a London point of view, because I think as we look at this, and as I've said a couple of times on Twitter, I've said it to you before, you're solving Las Vegas, you're solving Los Angeles. The next team that has an issue is going to look at London, and I think people could go to the MMQB.com website and see an article by Albert Breer. I tweeted it out on Tuesday morning as well, which kind of says that. It says that London's kind of next up. I think one of the things that people talk about here when it relates to London is, well, you know, we don't know if the fans want it. We don't know if the fans would get behind it, that kind of thing. Jeff, I've seen virtually nothing about Las Vegas fans. It's been about politicians managing to get the money in place to offer $750 million of public money to build a stadium. As you often say, this is the business of the business. I don't think it's outstanding fan support that has encouraged the Raiders to go to Las Vegas.
No, and if you look at the history of Las Vegas in terms of pro sports, there have been tries before. Right. I mean, you know, we did it. The CFL mm-hmm. went in there, failed after a year. This is the thing that people who talk about Vegas for professional sport franchises have to understand. It's a very transient town. There's no deep roots there. It's 50 years ago it was a tiny little speck in the desert. And, you know, it's a very, very, very fickle audience. It's a very transient, it's what have you done for me lately kind of environment there. And what's also interesting, Neil, and nobody talks about this, the NHL is going in there at about the same time.
Right.
They're going, you know, the NHL has announced that they're going to have a franchise in Las Vegas. So now, you know, Las Vegas has always kind of clamored to be a world-class city, you know. And what do you need to be a world-class city? You got to have a professional sport franchise. Well, now they've all of a sudden gone from none to two, and it's going to be competitive for that sporting dollar in there. And, you know, there's going to have to be some give. Las Vegas has never supported, and this is important for people to understand, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas is there, UNLV. Mm. They have been a dynamic basketball team. Yeah, when they were in the Final Four and Jerry Tartanian and all those guys were there, the running Rebs, they supported them. They came and watched. But the football team has never done well, and they've never gotten support. Now that basketball's just in the middle of the road, they don't get the support that they did once upon a time. So it's a tough, tough market. And, you know, when you talk about it's not like Chicago or Philly or Green Bay. I mean, those fans are dyed in the wool, and they're going to come no matter what. But Vegas isn't that animal. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that the Raiders have got to really be cautious about. And, you know, nobody, like you say, Neil, nobody talks about that fact. Everybody just wants to talk about the brand-new building, and sure, it's going to be beautiful and all that. But it's not revenue producing if there aren't people in the suites and aren't people in the seats. And, you know, there's too much risk in this thing for me. And it's really a shame, really, really a shame to me that it is leaving the Bay Area, because that, to me, will always be the Raiders.
Well, let's talk about a couple more issues I want to touch on this story, Jeff, because it's a story with so many different strands, you know, whether it's London or in a second I want to talk about how this impacts Los Angeles, but you mentioned it there. So the Raiders were 22 years in Oakland. Then Al Davis left for Los Angeles. Then they came back and they were another 22 years in Oakland. And now they're leaving for Vegas. They said they couldn't get a deal done in Oakland for a new stadium. And of course, having a stadium is so vital in the NFL today. You've got to have a modern, shiny facility that can attract other events. I think where, Jeff, I'll be a little bit careful because this is an NFL podcast, but I don't think Mark Davis listens, so I think we'll be all right. I think where this rubs British fans the wrong way is when a billionaire is trying to raise public money to build a stadium. That's, you know, they're trying to get public money. They're trying to get somebody else to pay for it. But again, I guess that's because Mark Davis is going to say, well, here's the value of having an NFL team in your city. But it just sometimes doesn't look quite right.
Well, you know, that's the thing that's always been really difficult for communities to – these teams hold them hostage. garbage, basically. Right. If they don't get what they want, because there's always that next place that's willing to build them a facility or, you know, do whatever, that again is going to be really interesting to see who the next one is that goes out there and says, all right, we're going to hold our taxpayers hostage to, or we're going to take the team to work. You know, if it is London, it's going to really be interesting. But, you know, they're running out of cities, Neil. That's the thing to me. That's why London becomes more and more viable all the time, because really in the United States, you're running out of communities now where you can go in and you've got that ability to build a new facility. And well, yeah, that's what it really comes down to, because there's no way San Diego wants to be up in L.A. in that market, split the market with another team.
No.
If they don't get a new facility.
Well, that's a good point, Jeff, because, you know, obviously owners are looking to make that money and make that splash. And Vegas is the 40th biggest market in the United States. So they're not going to a huge market, but of course it's known globally. It's the entertainment capital of the United States. So you've got that kind of splash. But after that, that's probably why London would be one of those that's considered, because it is a difference maker in terms of the finances of it. Just going back to Los Angeles, Jeff, I mean, tell us about the geography here. I mean, Raiders for a number of years in terms of fan base dominated LA. You've got the Chargers and the Rams. Are some of those fans now going to be siphoned off and going to Vegas?
Well, I think so, because, you know, you get that the whole LA basin, you know, with the millions and millions of people in LA is a very short 3-hour drive from Las Vegas. And so, you know, I'm sure that there is a contingent of, and always has been since the Raiders were in LA, there's still a lot of fans in LA that love the Raiders. And, you know, again, now that they're that accessible and that close, don't be surprised if that doesn't siphon some fans off of again, the Rams and the Chargers, who are struggling. The Raiders are a team that's, you know, is in a position to win now for the next few years. So I don't know. I there's so many things about it, Neil, that just, you know, you just shake your head. But, you know, back to the United States, where's the next city in the United States? It's not going to be Birmingham. It's not going to be, I mean, you go through it and you just, there is no place else now, logically, where you would move a team to. So again, where does the arrow point? It points east across the ocean.
Jeff, there are one last point on this. There are 76 casinos within the city limits of Las Vegas. This is a whole new world, isn't it, for the NFL? I mean, we would never have seen this 10, 20, 30 years ago, the team moving to Las Vegas.
If you would have said, even 15 years ago, Neil, if you would have said the NFL is going to come to Vegas, they stayed as far away from that thing as they could, and that's why a number of teams have stayed out of there. They've been trying to entice baseball. They've been trying to entice basketball. Finally, hockey and football have broken the barrier and gone in there. Just, you know, again, you have to almost have lived in Vegas to really understand that whole psyche there. I mean, there are so many potential challenges that, you know, with what you're talking about, with, you know, the gambling and, you know, I've been there, I lived there, I know the deal, and I'm just telling you, it can be a tough, tough situation. And I think this is a really, really risky move for the league.
I guess just finishing up, Jeff, the only saving grace for the Raiders in Oakland for the next couple of years is it looks like it's going to be a good team and people want to get behind a winner. But you're right, it's a potential. It's one worth monitoring, isn't it? But to see how that fan base feels.
You know, on one hand, that the dyed-in-the-wool Raider Nation, they're going to support their team no matter where it goes. But again, if you know, Neil, we've talked about this as we've done Raider games on Sky. You look at that one end of this, or that one side of the stadium, this upper deck, is all got, it's got it's got a tarp over the top, so that so it doesn't show empty seats. Well, you know, again, if that's the case, and they're winning, and they're their team, and this was kind of the fans' chance to really show that they support for the team. What's going to happen now when the fans know that they're going to go? I was interesting to see Jed York said he doesn't think that the 49ers will become, you know, the team by proxy just because they're in the Bay, because he said the Raider fans are a different breed, which is really true. But what will they do? Will they just turn their backs on the team? I think it's going to be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, it will be. One thing we don't know what's going to happen, you know, long term in terms of London and all of the stuff we just discussed. But I think we can expect to see for the next couple of years, Jeff, these teams that relocate, they have to play international games by the looks of things, with the Rams coming back now a couple of years to London. I think we'll see the Chargers and I think we'll see the Raiders in a couple of years or in the near future playing in London. I guess one, you probably cursed under your breath, Jeff, when you saw this move. What if they go? What if they do away with the silver and black? What happens then?
Well, then I'm out. Then I'm done.
It's too much. Step too far.
You know, I'm, you know what? And that's interesting you say that, because that was one of the first things I thought about. Now, if they do that, then, like I say, I'm out. I'm done with them, because that is so much of them, right?
Yeah.
That whole, I mean, and you got to go. I don't know if fans understand how that uniform came to be.
Go on.
When the Raiders were born, West Point Army, right, was one of the college powers at the time, and the uniform was actually modeled after armies,
right?
Which was very simple, you know, black shirt, number, solid pant, you know, the whole deal. I mean, it's very, very, not conservative, but very distinct, right? And that uniform has survived all of those, you know, survived moves. It survived all those years while teams were changing logos and doing. That has always been them. Mm. I mean, if you go back and you look at, you know, Daryl LaMonica in 68, and then you look at, you know, Carr today, you know, obviously the athletes are different, but the uniform's the same uniform, still the
right.
Raiders,
there's
right?
There's no throwback uniform. It's the same from generation to generation.
Heck no. And that's, right. You know, like, the only way you did get a throwback uniform with the Raiders is you change the face mask.
Exactly.
You know,
you go back to
the single bar that Freddie B used to wear.
And, Jeff, that's, you know, what they'll hope. They'll hope that strength of the franchise, as in the Raiders have fans all over the America, they have fans all over the world, that's what they're going to be banking on. They're going to be hoping that they still have their fans in Oakland, they have their fans in LA, and they have new fans in Vegas. But of course, Oakland is having its heart ripped out right now, or will be, in a very slow process over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and like you say, Neil, it's the worst kind. It's a slow death. It's like you're getting bled to death, because you know you're going to be this season, then the off season, then another season, and now the clock starts to tick. I think it's very analogous to being on death row, and you know you're just counting the days, and that's what's happening now. Sad as it is, Oakland is on death row.
Well, if they're on death row, Jeff, maybe their last meal is Marshawn Lynch. Stop that bleeding.
Would be, yeah, I'm going to tell you something. That would be a ray of sunshine for the Raider Nation, right?
Get the local boy in to play for the Raiders the last couple of years in Oakland. One other piece of news. Sorry, go on, Jeff.
I think that'd be a genius move. I think I'd love to see that.
I won't get into all the rule changes that have been proposed, because obviously some of these are still being voted on as we're recording this. But I did think it was interesting and probably depressing for the rest of the NFL yesterday, Jeff, when Robert Kraft, the New England Patriots owner, said that he thinks Tom Brady's willing to play another 6 or 7 years. We've seen Tom Brady play in those Super Bowls and in those big playoff games and still at a high level. I'm not doubting him.
No, I'm not doubting him at all. 6 or 7 might be a stretch, but how about this one? Mr. Kraft came out and said he wants Belichick to coach till he's 80.
Yeah, how does that... Are you coaching till you're 80, Jeff?
Heck no. No way. Yeah, I mean, I had this visual when I saw that of, you know, Belichick at 80 and Brady at whatever that would be, 55 or whatever, still playing quarterback.
Belichick's got the old grumpy old man routine down pat already. He doesn't need to be 80.
Yeah, can you imagine how grumpy he'll be at 80?
Exactly.
Oh,
be perfect. Be great. Let's get on to our state of the franchise then, because obviously free agency is still rolling on. The draft is a month away. Let's have a look at the Buffalo Bills, where we'll pick things up. The Buffalo Bills were 7-9 last year. They got Rex Ryan fired at the end of that season. Offense was 16th overall, 30th in passing offense, first in rushing, 164.4 yards per game. Defense was 19th, 6th against the pass, 29th against the run. Sean McDermott comes in as the 7th head coach since this team last made the playoffs. It's 17 years, Jeff, with no playoffs. And I want to start with this, and it's not a football thing, but I saw this today. I was doing a bit of digging into the Buffalo Bills. They've hired a talent consultant who used to work at ESPN called Jerry Matalon, who's been hired to consult on improving the team's image. This is the kind of thing that screams to me, sign players. Don't sign... what are you doing? I mean, this is like dysfunctional.
I don't disagree one bit. You know, and what's crazy about this team to me, Neil, is when we looked at this team, and I'm not talking about just you and me, Buffalo Bills, a scant, 18 months ago, 12 months ago, everybody said this is a team that's headed in the right direction.
Right.
Look at the roster that they're putting together. This team's going to be really a challenge to New England in the East, and they just, I mean, it's been nothing but a circus now. And, you know, you go back even beyond, everybody's going to point at Rex, right? Mm-hmm. And justifiably so in some cases. But there's got to be a deeper dysfunction in there, because when is the last time you ever saw a guy who has a head coaching job in the National Football League and decides I'd rather go be an assistant in Jacksonville?
It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, we're talking about Doug Marrone, and actually, they had the needle had part started to point positive under Marrone, but again, the one guy that you have to question is Doug Whaley. Mm. He's been the consistent guy through the whole thing. Now, again, look at their off-season moves. You know, obviously. The thing that with Tyrod was so much drama, you know, and you look at it, and just from a pure football standpoint, say, why would you even think about letting that guy go until you got somebody better? Because E.J. Manuel, who you drafted first, is a complete failure, and that you just got to admit it and move on, right? But, they had Tyrod, dangling in the wind for a while, and it just... Yeah. It just doesn't, it's kind of a crazy, crazy way of doing business.
Yeah, let's dig into a bit of the roster. I see some of this, Jeff, from a sort of reporter covering the team point of view, and they got rid of their longtime PR man who's been in the building for decades, and it's almost like other people are carrying the can. Doug Whaley's still there, but we'll dig into the roster a little bit, starting with Tyrod Taylor, of course. They couldn't pay him $30 million for this coming season, but they restructured the contract. But now you've got concerns, Jeff, I'm going to say, about the passing game around him, because now you lost Robert Woods and Marquise Goodwin. They're not necessarily stellar receivers, but they're thin at wide receiver now because Sammy Watkins had broken ribs in 2014, a hip injury in 2015. He missed 8 games last year, and he's now recovering from a serious foot injury. He's the one that's going to blow the top off the defense. When you look at the rest of it, I mean, they've got 3 fullbacks on the roster. Patrick DeMarco, Mike Tolbert, Jerome Felton. I mean, if you want a fullback, great. You've gone and signed 3 of the best in the NFL. But only 3 of them. There's not much explosion to this offense now.
No, and the thing that Tyrod does better than anything else, throw the deep ball. When Sammy's not healthy, Marquise Goodwin, he at least could run.
Right.
So you look at this bunch now, and you go, boy, where are we going here? I know they made a big deal about re-signing Brandon Tate, but, and Philly Brown has had his moments in Carolina, but he's also dropped the football an awful lot.
Well, Andre Holmes could end up being the number two receiver there, Jeff. He was, what, probably third at best in Oakland, and now he's going to be the number two. I mean, it's an example that there's a need there for Buffalo.
No question. And you look around that football team and, look at what they've done in the offseason. Yeah, okay, they went out and they signed DaCosta to help them inside, Tolbert. But, Mike Tolbert he's a good fullback. He can catch the ball out of the back. He can do some things for you. But that's not a guy you build your offense around. And, you cut your kicker and you go out. This is just they're all over the place to me. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for Sean McDermott. I think he's a really good football coach, and I think he's a really smart guy. It's just the organization around him scares me a little bit, I thought Micah Hyde, they have a safety need, and they go out and get Micah Hyde. I think that's a good signing. He's a good football player.
They've changed completely the safeties, Jeff. So they cut Aaron Williams from last year and Corey Graham, and they're going to go with Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, who was formerly with the Cleveland Browns. Before we dig into the defense, I've read with interest Sean McDermott is apparently going to try and dial things back and almost get to the point again where it's simplified and let those defensive linemen. They've got good pass rushers, Jerry Hughes, Marcel Darius from the inside. Kyle Williams can still get to the quarterback as well. Apparently they're going to simplify things and let those guys just get after the quarterback, Jeff. I mean, was Rex too complex? Did he? Because Mario Williams complained that he was dropping into coverage when he should have been going forwards. I mean, we know he was disgruntled in Buffalo, but what did you make of their defense and what they're going to do going forward?
Well, first of all, I'm going to discount anything Mario Williams says because, when you play hard every down, then I'll hear you. But we got to remember now, when this, you go back 2 years, this defense led the NFL in sacks.
Yeah.
And, like you say, Jerry Hughes and those are good football players. They've got a good front. Now, what the knock was on Rex from the, player standpoint, and I think people that watch him saw the issues, was it's too complex, too many mistakes, too many things where there were too many adjustments trying to be made, and it was, it just, you look at them and they gave up huge chunk plays. They gave up big runs because guys were out of their gap, didn't know where they belonged. They gave up big passes on blown coverages. So I think what McDermott's going to do is go back to, just the fundamentals. Go back to playing simple, playing smart, playing fast, and let their talent play. And, again, if there's ever been a criticism of Rex and Rob, it's that they can make the system so complex and so hard that the players are thinking rather than playing. And I think that's a positive sign by McDermott to just let those great athletes play up front and let them get after the quarterback.
A couple of other question marks on defense. They re-signed their sack leader, Lorenzo Alexander, but they haven't signed the leading tackler from last season yet in middle linebacker, weak side linebacker, Zach Brown. He did play inside. But they, Jeff, they lost Stephon Gilmore, which is huge. This is a genuine, potentially franchise cornerback who's 26 years old. He's gone to big money to the New England Patriots. They have a real need now as they enter the NFL draft for a cornerback.
Yeah, because they cut Roby and you lose Gilmore, and now even no matter how good your pass rush is, if you can't cover in the back end, they're going to have a hard time getting home. Now, what it says to me is they'll probably play more zone than they did because Rex was a big man guy, but. You in the draft now, are you saying you're going to draft two rookie corners and put them out there and, try and win in that division with those guys? That's going to be tough. I think this is a rebuilding team. I think this is a team that has got to find an identity and stay with it. I think it's a team that, you look around and you see age on it. Offensively, you know, they've struggled to run the football consistently. And, you know, again, how much does McCoy have in the tank left?
Yeah.
And you look at Richie Incognito at guard. He's played pretty well but again, he's at the end of his string. So I just don't. They go out and get Clay from Miami and really never have used him the way that they anticipated using him. So, I think this is a team got a lot of work to do this offseason.
Well, yeah, Jeff, you mentioned that finding identity. And on offense, I guess it is LeSean McCoy or some of the running of Tyrod Taylor. He's so effective when he runs. But now I'm picturing this team that, first of all, can you rely on LeSean McCoy, as you say, week in and week out? Is he that kind of workhorse back? He had 1,200 yards last year, but he still missed some time with injuries. But I think if you've got this team where it's running and running and running, then you want to be able to play action pass. I mean, you tell me from a coach's point, play action pass and try and blow the top off the defense every now and then. I can see them running play action pass this year and then dumping it off to Patrick DeMarco.
Well, that's where you say, who's the guy that they're going to blow the top off the coverage?
Yeah.
Who, if Sammy's not healthy, and you know, again, you start talking about a guy that his durability now has become an issue, and when he's healthy, he's a dynamic guy. He
right.
can do an awful lot for you, but you know, if he's on the sideline, he's dinged up. He can't help you. And where else? What else is there right now? You know, what else is there? You know, in terms of, like you say. Now you got him on. You're getting those advantage downs, and you can go play action and try and get your big one. Well, you got to have somebody that can, you know, beat somebody and get up the field. If Watkins can't stay healthy, then this team's going to struggle in the passing game.
Jeff, you follow this team quite closely. They're pretty well situated to where you are in Canada. What are you seeing them being this year? An arrow up, arrow down, or arrows kind of sideways? For me, they're a little bit down. But what about you?
You know what? I think that they're a little bit down, and as we enter the draft now,
sure.
Again, what are they going to do in the draft is going to be really critical for me. Mm. But I think the reason I don't say the arrow pointing straight down is because I really have confidence in McDermott that he's going to, you know, get the focus back where the focus needs to be, and you know that's on fundamentals, playing solid football, being where you're supposed to be, you know, in the scheme, doing, you know, here we sound like the Patriots again,
yes.
But doing your job, you know, and I think that's kind of leaked out of Buffalo the last couple of years.
All right, that's the Buffalo Bills. Let's move on to another 7-9 team. All three of our State of the Franchise teams this week finished 7-9 last season. But we're looking at the New Orleans Saints. So they were number one offense in the NFL, the number one passing attack with 317.1 passing yards per game. Defense was 27th overall. This has been a constant problem. 32nd against the pass, 14th against the run. Jeff, we're seeing now with New Orleans this trading away of Brandon Cooks. As Sean Payton said, we've got offensive assets that there's too much imbalance. Basically, you look at it right there. An offense ranked first in the NFL, defense 27th. We've been saying for a number of years now this defense has only got to be middle of the pack, and this is a team right back in the middle of the playoffs.
Yeah, but again, we keep saying the same thing about this team, right?
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's Groundhog Day.
You can't outscore everybody, and that seems to have been the way that they wanted to handle it, and the defense has kind of been an afterthought. Now, they've done some work this offseason, you know, in terms of improving that, but when you look at it, when you really – if you say, okay, well, they went out and they got two linebackers and da-da-da-da, and yeah, okay, on paper those are, at least it shows you're working at it, but it's the guys that they got that aren't, you know, they're not like, to me, impact signings. I like Manti Te'o, I do, but is he one of the top linebackers in the NFL? No, he's a good player. Not a great player, a good player, right? And his best thing is not stopping the run, and that's something that they have struggled to do. And you go out and you get A.J. Klein, and A.J. Klein's a, he, if, that's what you're going to put on the field at linebacker, you're going to struggle some, right? He's a limited guy. So there's your two signings at linebacker. Now, they, you know, they working to get the front done, Nick Fairley. But, again, which Nick Fairley are you going to get? You sign him to a one-year deal because you're worried about what? Is he motivated all the time? So as you go through this football team, you know, I don't see the impact guys on the defensive side of the football, you know.
No, you still need a rusher, an edge rusher, Jeff, who kind of takes over games. I mean, they have Cameron Jordan every now and then who flashes some of that, but you know, this, imagine if this team had a Von Miller with Drew Brees getting them out in front, and then somebody of that nature. I mean, everyone wants a Von Miller, of course, but you know, there's not even anyone approaching half of what Von Miller is.
No. And again, now here's the other thing, that the first thing I think about when I think about the Saints, when, you know, obviously you talk about the defense, their liabilities on defense. Mm-hmm. They went out a couple years ago and, you know, big free agent signing, Jarius Byrd, you know, all that. A guy has never worked out for him, right? And so they end up cutting him. You go out and you draft at the position and, you know, Kenny Vaccaro, and he flashes, but oftentimes misses tackles, plays out of control, you know. So they haven't got bang for their buck. Their best secondary guy is a guy they signed from us. And, you know, Delvin Bro, but he's been hurt. Broke his arm last year, didn't play a whole lot. He's back, and P.J. Williams is back. Those guys, they have a chance, but, you know, around them are just pedestrian guys. They're just not – they're not guys that you look at and say, well, there's a guy, there's a linchpin of your defense. You know, there's a guy you can hang your hat on. They're an under-talented bunch, and they, you know, again, have, that's been proved. It's not the coaching. I mean, everybody blamed Rob, right?
Right.
And everybody blamed Spags, and now everybody's blaming Dennis Allen. Well, that's three coordinators have been through the place, and the results are the same. How many times have we talked about this is historically the worst defense in the National Football League?
Well, Jeff, we've talked bigger picture with the Saints before in terms of how much dead money is being wasted on players that are no longer on this roster. You can add some now with Jarius Byrd to that list. I mean, I haven't looked at the figures, but I would guess the Saints are up there leading the league in that again. And, you know, we've talked now for a number of years when we do the state of the franchise. Well, the offense is in place, just got to get half-decent defense, and they're there. Mickey Loomis, the general manager, Jeff, runs the NBA team as well. Still blows my mind that. It still absolutely blows my mind that you can be the general manager of two completely different sports franchises.
Yeah, that is a unique one. And, you know, and I think there's another number that we have to look at really closely when we start talking about the Saints, and it's 38, and that's how old the quarterback is.
In his final year of his deal.
I'm a huge Drew Brees fan, but 38 now, Neil, the window is really closing on this team. So, you know, if they're going to make it, if they're, you know, another 7-9 season, that's probably what this team's looking at.
Yeah, Drew Brees was well protected last year. Terron Armstead is a good left tackle. They got Max Unger now from Seattle as well. They drafted Andrus Peat. Jeff, there have been 9 5,000-yard seasons in NFL history, and five of them belong to Drew Brees. You're absolutely right. We should all be fans of Drew Brees, but we should accept as well that he's kind of letting this deal play out with the Saints. There's going to be salary cap implications there as well. He's 38. Sean Payton and Johnny Manziel met at the Super Bowl. They've been working out Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech. I mean, there has to be a succession plan soon, but I get the feeling that this team feels like they can move on from offensive players as long as they've got Drew Brees. That's why we see Jimmy Graham now in Seattle. We see Brandon Cooks now in New England. They feel like Drew Brees gives them a chance every week, and actually they're probably right.
Well, I agree with that. He does give you a chance every week, but how many more weeks does he have?
Right.
Again, you know, he takes immaculate care of himself. He's a great competitor. He does all the right things. But again, at some point, I mean, Father Time is undefeated. He's going to get you eventually. And when you start getting up into the mid-30s, and now he's in his upper 30s, you know, it's a very, very unusual guy. We saw how fast the decline comes. And, you know, so the Saints, you know, you got to start thinking beyond Drew Brees. That's just doing your job as a general manager and personnel guy. And, you know, so again, now you're going to take a quarterback. You got all kinds of needs on defense. I just really think this is about what they're going to be, a 7-19 team again.
So we're looking kind of arrow sideways for the Saints, Jeff.
Yep, that's the way I look at it.
Why do we see, as just as we wrap up on the New Orleans Saints, why do we see this, and it might be a perception thing, but why do we see this kind of speculation that Sean Payton is unsettled almost every offseason? And this past offseason he was linked with potential trades to the Rams, among other teams. I mean, that can't help when you're trying to attract free agents. I mean, just the perception from the outside is that Sean Payton is always on some kind of, not necessarily on a hot seat, but like he's always on the lookout for what's next.
Yeah, see, I don't take it as, I agree with you, Neil. I don't take it as he's on the hot seat.
No.
I don't hear people talking about, well, you know, this is, if we get another 7-9 season, we're going to make a change. I think it's him, really. I don't know if he encourages. I think that's probably too strong a way to say it. But he certainly doesn't discourage all the chatter. And, again, all that stuff's unsettling. And like you say, it's unsettling for free agents who are considering New Orleans as a place to go. It's unsettling for your football team, because when there's change at the top, there's always change in the roster. So, you know, I just don't see it as productive. I don't know what good comes of it. And I think, you know, certainly if I was talking to Sean about it, I'd say, hey, listen, you know, is that helping your football team? Put an end to it. Just stop the speculation. Just go out and, you know, say you're going to be in New Orleans till whatever, right? You know, even if it's not true, you got to say it so that you can stop some of that chatter.
Well, the Saints are certainly exciting to watch. We're going to see a future Hall of Famer play in London this year in Drew Brees. But, Jeff, until, just as we wrap up on the Saints, until that defense is fixed, that's why they're interesting to watch, because they're going to be involved in high-scoring thrillers almost every week.
Yeah, you go watch the Saints play, you're going to see a lot of big plays. You're going to see them on both sides. And, you know, that's just, you're exactly right, Neil. I don't think you're being unfair when you say that. I think you're being 100% honest. Until that defense gets fixed, they don't got to be great on defense. They just have to be in the middle of the pack. Just be decent, right? Get yourself a return game. Their special teams have not been strong either. Get yourself a return game. You know, play middle of the pack defense. Don't give up big plays, and you're going to win. You might have a 10-win season. I could see that out of this team if they can get the defense straightened out.
Jeff, actually, just on that, you were talking about the cornerback position, and you can see why they kind of kicked the tires on Malcolm Butler and did explore that trade with the New England Patriots, because they're in a division with Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan. There's six games straight away where you're facing very good quarterbacks every week.
Yeah, and now they're better receivers.
Yes.
Tampa went out.
Yep.
So now it's just not Mike Evans. They got a guy that can go on top of you now. And you look at the weapons that the Falcons have. And, you know, Cam obviously is one of the best deep ball throwers in the league. And, you know, again, so it's not an easy division. So, you know, corner is a prerequisite in the NFL, and it's really a prime requisite in that division.
All right, let's move on then to the Philadelphia Eagles, our final team from this week's State of the Franchise. They won't pick 12th overall in the draft, because that pick went to the Cleveland Browns, because Philadelphia flip-flopped last year in order to get Carson Wentz. Jeff, let me just give you the numbers. Offense was 22nd in the NFL, 24th in passing, 11th in rushing. Defense was 13th against the pass, 15th against the run. They went 7-9 like our other two teams this week. Carson Wentz got some good work though, Jeff. We thought he wasn't going to be ready. Then they trade away Sam Bradford. He throws 607 passes as a rookie. There were times when you and I were watching, sat together on Sky Sports, where he looked like a rabbit in the headlights. But I'd say overall, decent body of work for Carson Wentz, who will have learned from that rookie year. And I don't think the rookie year broke him, which would be important because you don't want to upset his long-term development. What did you think of Carson Wentz's first year in the NFL?
I would say productive, good first year. I mean, he started out great.
Yep.
And then the film traveled. And, yep. and which is not unusual. I mean, he didn't play very much in the preseason. And so you weren't sure what you were getting from a coordinator standpoint, as a defensive coordinator will look at it. But once the film started to get around the league, you saw that the ball wasn't getting pushed down the field, that if you saturated the low zones, that you were going to make it tough on him. And I think, the game kind of caught up to him. And then they started to have some challenges. This team started 3-0, Neil. Remember, everybody was talking about the Eagles. And you go from 3-0 to finishing 7-9. I'm not a math guy, but that means you're 4-9 over the back end. That's not very good.
It's pretty good math, Jeff. What? Well done. You were quick with that.
So, actually, I had it written down.
Yeah, you cheat.
But you look at what they've done. They went out and got Warmack. I think that helps them because they got an old offensive line. You look at those guys; they're long in the tooth there. And when you lose an offensive lineman to a suspension, that hurt them.
Hurt Lane Johnson. That was Jeff. That really set them back, didn't it?
Yeah, and again, as you look at him, Jason Peters, how much more football does he have in him?
Back
right? Yeah, and so that offensive line, I think, just kind of their play declined over the course of the season, and that put then too much pressure on the quarterback. They had too many problems protecting him. Jason Kelce didn't play very well, So again, I think that this is a team that I think has a chance to be better. The problem for this team, Neil, in my mind, is you're playing in a really tough division.
Yeah,
I mean,
they really are. Let's talk wide receivers, Jeff, for a sec. Let's talk wide receivers with this team because last year was a real area of weakness, especially the receivers on the outside. I think everyone kind of accepts that Jordan Matthews can be explosive and productive in the slot, but outside receiver wise, Nelson Agholor never stepped up as a rookie. Dorial Green-Beckham was kind of a roll the dice after he failed in Tennessee, but they've gone and got Alshon Jeffery and Torrey Smith. Jeffery's on a 1-year deal and again a kind of show me kind of deal, and if you read stuff from the reporters who cover the NFC East, Jeff, those two deals have got some real thumbs up across the board. But I think you're asking Alshon Jeffery to be what he was a couple of years ago and Torrey Smith to be what he was in Baltimore, not what he was the last 2 years in San Francisco. So it's not without risk, but it is something that had to be tried and had to be addressed.
Yeah, Alshon Jeffery's basically a prove-it deal, right? And, and what they're hoping is that those guys, like you say, Neil, they can get back to what they once were. And, Alshon Jeffery's a big physical receiver. Torrey Smith, when used correctly, in my opinion, can be a good player.
Yeah.
Now, when he went into that mess in San Francisco and, got lost, what they're banking on is that, that player that was so dynamic in Baltimore is going to resurface now in Philadelphia. To be honest with you, Alshon Jeffery needs that to be the receiver that he can be.
Yes.
When you look at his great year in Chicago, what did he have on the other side? He had Brandon Marshall.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of the way that they're looking at this pairing. Because really, Jordan Matthews is a three.
Yep.
And, I think we saw that. And I agree with you. Agholor has been a real disappointment, a real disappointment. And Green Beckham, again, is exactly what you called him, just the roll of the dice. So,
but if Jeffery can be...
I think this team is better, significantly better than they were last year, and that's a step.
Well, yeah, because you add in Brent Celek and Zach Ertz at tight end, and suddenly you're starting to have some options for Carson Wentz. The running game, Jeff, at first glance at the depth chart, you would say is absolutely fine. Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles, Wendell Smallwood, but then you dig a little bit deeper, and Matthews has a neck injury. Sproles is 33 and is talking about only playing one more year. And Smallwood's only really flashed in limited chances. I mean, this may actually be an area that gets addressed in the draft.
Yeah, I think they need to draft a running back, frankly. And the good news for Eagle fans is there's a lot of them in the draft.
Right.
And, you know, Ryan Matthews, I've been a Ryan Matthews fan since he was at Fresno State, but the issue has always been the same thing. Can he stay healthy? And like you say, now he's got a neck. You know, Sproles is again at the end of it. I think this team really, really, really could use a running back. There are some dynamic ones in the draft, and I think that's probably where they'll go very early on in their, you know, in their draft room.
I guess a couple of other spots as we look at the Eagles would be on defense. So half of their defensive line's gone. Jeff Connor Barwin and defensive tackle Benny Logan, who was a real sort of good foil alongside Fletcher Cox in the middle. And I'm going to say this. You always say, whenever you say with all due respect, you're not really giving a lot of respect. But with all due respect to the guys that are on their roster, they really, really need cornerbacks.
Yeah. There's no question. No question. And the front can't operate if they can't cover anybody.
Right.
And that's been a problem, and it's one that they're going to have to address in free agency. And you know, it's a good draft class, but you're talking about rookies now, and that's a tough place. I mean, that's a tough place to learn how to play. And you know, I think that's a, you know, you lose Nolan Carroll. You know, you got older guys around him. I think that's a serious, serious position of need. And you know, again, this team is you know, close. But again, Neil, you know, the Cowboys have come back to him probably a little bit with all of their free agency losses, right?
Yep.
But New York is reloading. Washington's reloading. I think this is a team that's going to be better, but I don't know if it's going to significantly show in the one loss column. Frankly,
it's a brutal division. It really is. I'm thinking arrow up as well, Jeff. I like what I saw out of Carson Wentz. I liked him coming out of college. I kind of liked the way he carried himself. When you put what he'd done up against Jared Goff, there was sort of concerns that Wentz was going to take longer to adapt. That certainly wasn't the case, and I think, you know, if the receiving weapons around him help out, I think it helps this whole team. What did you make of Doug Peterson as head coach for the first time with the Eagles?
You know, I thought he did a good job, and Doug was our quarterback in NFL Europe in 1995 with the Rhine Fire, and so I've known him. I watched his career go from high school coach to quarterback coach with the Eagles to offensive coordinator with the Chiefs, and now back to the Eagles as head coach. I think he learned a great deal, and I think that until you sit in that corner office, you can't really appreciate just how much there is to it, and especially in a city with a tough media market like Philadelphia is. But I thought he did a good job of holding his team together when they were struggling. You know, you talk about that 4-9 finish.
Yep.
They competed, and that's what to me, that's the mark of a head coach. Are they fundamentally sound? Do they beat themselves, and do they compete? No, those are the things you evaluate. And I thought Doug did a good job in his first year. I really like the young quarterback. Yeah. I really, really think he's got a chance to be a really fine one. They got to protect him. And I think by upgrading what he has to throw to, that it's only going to get better for him. I just think he's like you, Neil. I liked his poise. I liked the way he carried himself in the build up to the draft, how he's handled, you know, the pressure of being the quarterback in Philadelphia, which is not an easy position to play, you know, in the media. And I think the kid has a bright, bright future.
Yeah, I think he learned as he went along as well. And actually, Doug Peterson found his voice as a head coach very early, Jeff, because he was telling Carson Wentz to dial it back on the runs and not to try and run over defenders. And I think actually the young quarterback listened and he learned from that. I'm fascinated to see how the pair of them work together, you know, next 4 or 5 years with these Eagles. I certainly feel like they're going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an Eagle fan, you got to feel like, hey, you know, we need to have a good draft. Mm. We need to have, you know, that pick from Minnesota.
Yes.
That's a big bonus now this year.
Yeah, you
know,
get that first pick back, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they need, like you said, they need to get it right. You need to get an impact player, and they should, because I think there's some impact players in the draft at positions where they need them.
All right, let's take a look in the mailbag just to wrap up this week. Question from Brian Friel, who says, does John Elway ruling out a trade for Tony Romo mean that Trevor Siemian gets the quarterback role, or will Paxton Lynch step up? Jeff, this week at the NFL owners meetings, John Elway said that we like the two guys, the young guys we've got, and obviously we drafted Paxton Lynch in the first round for a reason. But I think it's worth pointing out to Brian and to our other listeners that John Elway knows the rules of the NFL and he knows how this game is played. And while Tony Romo is under contract with the Dallas Cowboys, which he is, then Elway cannot discuss the possibility of him being on his team. So while he's standing by Siemian and Lynch, that doesn't mean he's completely out of the Tony Romo sweepstakes.
No, I think that's a very wise way to look at it. You know, he's going to say the right things, and I'm sure he's going to continue to explore everything that can give his football team a chance to win. And that, you know, again, you can like the heck out of those young guys, but if you have a team like the Broncos are, that is in that Super Bowl discussion, in that championship conversation, then your responsibility is to get the best players you can find to push you through that window. Now, we all know that there are liabilities that you get when you get Romo. He's injury prone, he's older, but he is still, in my opinion, a better choice if you've got one season to get back to the Super Bowl. And that's the way I think they have to look at it. And, you know, I would not be surprised if something isn't done, you know, either before the draft or right after the draft.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I think Houston is still in the mix. Denver absolutely should be. Kieran, I don't know how to pronounce his surname. Kieran Tyvum, I'm going to say. Tyvum. Kieran Tyvum. I'm having a nightmare with this name. I'll just ask you the question, Jeff, from Kieran. He says, are NFL franchises in danger of losing their identity if they keep moving to different cities?
Well, you know, to me, I think so. You know, again, and I'm going to give you just a historical perspective on it, right? The Rams is the one that I think about, because they were the LA Rams. And when you think about those Rams, it was, you know, blue and white, fearsome foursome, Merlin Olsen, Deacon Jones, you know, Roman Gabriel at quarterback, Jack Snow at wide receiver. I mean, that was the Rams, right? And it was an iconic, you know, logo. It was, you know, and then it went to St. Louis and it became the greatest show on turf and all, and they had success. They won a Super Bowl. There's no question about that. But it wasn't, you never felt like they were home. You never felt like they really belonged in St. Louis, right? And then that dried up and they headed back to Los Angeles. But what happens is, even in that case, Neil, time and fans move on. And, you know, you don't sense that deep connection to the city that they once had. And I think the same thing's true with the Chargers. The Chargers were in L.A. A lot of people don't even realize this. Yeah. The Chargers were in L.A. once themselves and then moved down the freeway to San Diego and now have moved back to L.A. But, you know, is there a Charger fan base in L.A.? They got to build a whole nother one, right? Mm. So, yeah, I think there's some truth to that.
Certainly the speed with which the Raiders were able to move, and apparently by all accounts, Jeff, it was just a cursory conversation in the room before they went straight to the vote. That to me is the, you know, it's easier to move a franchise these days if you pony up the relocation fee, which leads me to the last question from Simon Hunter, who says, how far from a London franchise are we? I saw Robert Kraft quoted this week again, Jeff, saying that, yeah, he thinks 5 to 7 years. 5 years will be when the next collective bargaining agreement runs out. Eric Grubman, who's a senior executive for the NFL, said, you know, that we'll know when that time is for another team to want to look at relocation, because it will be a stadium issue. The stadium will be old and non-productive, and those storm clouds will start to gather, I think. when those storm clouds gather again, London's next in line. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that, Neil. And I think that one of the things that one of the hurdles that we're going to have to cross is the collective bargaining agreement about the players. There are going to be some issues that they're going to have to, and they're not un, you know, I don't think they're deal breaker issues, but they're going to be some things that they're going to have to work with the players on. And, you know, I think movement, team movement is frankly, you know, it's just a reality in the NFL world. And, you know, you talk about where the storm clouds may gather, and you started talking about a stadium getting older, and I just think about there's a city in North Florida that, you know, that we might be talking about. And, you know, it's I think it's going to happen. I really truly believe it's going to happen. I think more on the end of five than seven, but I think it's truly going to happen. You know something, Neil? We're talking about all these movement issues. I didn't realize this. I was shocked, actually, that the Raiders, when they went first from Oakland to L.A., did it without NFL approval. That is unbelievable. Wow. I did not know that they did it without the commissioner's approval, without NFL approval. They just moved.
Let's see this. Yeah, they did the old antitrust violation, wasn't it? They said that basically other business couldn't tell them how to run their business, even though it was kind of the league operating as one. But they're good soldiers now, Jeff. They go the right way about it, you see. So
they are, as long as they get their way.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Jeff, we are out of time. Now, based on last week's news that you've got the negotiating rights to Colin Kaepernick, I'm going to let you get off so you can get the rights to Brandon Whedon and Mark Sanchez this week.
Wait a second. We got RG3, too.
I know you have. And Johnny Manziel.
Don't show it. And hey, I'm not gonna. I can't do that to Brandon Whedon. But I was gonna take a shot at Brandon Whedon. But I'll let it go. That's too easy. That's too low hanging fruit, as they say.
There you go. Because Brandon would take one back at you and miss. All right. On that positive note, we'll be back next week with more State of the Franchise, and we will also bring you all the latest news from around the NFL. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.